Okay, so Nehemiah successfully convinced the king to arm him, to supply him with whatever he needed to rebuild Yerushalayim, but there's still some degree of social disorder and some serious complaints from the part of the general populace. There are some problems that made their way into the general population, as they were concentrating so much on bringing back the independence of Israel, or if not the independence, then at least some degree of a working government, even as the Persians are ruling things around here, but that we can have some, at least some degree of autonomy when it comes to the workings of the temple and the workings of Jerusalem. The Persians afforded us this as part of a prophecy of Yirmiyahu, who said that you will return to the land in tranquility. There won't be a conquest, there won't be a kibush, as we saw at the time when Yehoshua came to the land. These are prophecies according to Yirmiyahu in chapter 31, according to the Malbim's reading of what Yirmiyahu is talking about. So this return was not without glitches, as we see right here in chapter 5. Let's read. There was quite a bit of an outcry, right? And you can imagine, whenever there was ever been the very beginning of a return to Israel, things were not easy. Right? We already know why they weren't easy, because there were no Jews remaining in Israel all those years to keep it easy. Right? When Jews started coming back in, let's say, even in modest numbers in the 1870s, 1880s, we call it the first pioneers, the Chalutz, the early Chalutzim, right, the first Aliyah, the facing them was nothing but malaria. You know, Tel Aviv was a mud pile in 1920, right? So the situation was very similar here, because for so many years Muslims and Christians were not building up the land of Israel. All they were doing was conquering the land of Israel, right? One from the other. No one bothered to actually build up the place. I remember the famous article from Mark Twain from that appeared in Harper's Magazine about his trip to Israel. He said it's an absolute wasteland. He said the Jordan River is the most overrated river in the world.
Is it true?
And at the time the Muslims were before the British Mandate, the Turks were running the place, and it was an absolute wasteland. Right? It wasn't until the Jews came to build it up. This is actually a fulfillment of a prophecy at the end of Vayikra that Rashi mentions actually in his parish, that says that when the nations take over your land, nothing will work for them. It will never succeed, because they don't care to. They're not interested in building up Israel. They're just interested in owning it and conquering it. Once the Jews started building it up, that's when everyone said, oh, this has been our holy land all along. Right? Jerusalem, the word Jerusalem does not appear in the Quran. Okay, but when the Jews came back with Nehemiah, there was a public outcry, because there were no services. The situation was very dire for anybody. There was wasn't a land of plenty. There was a land of cement. The ground was like rock. Right? There was no arable soil. There was there was nothing working, because no Jews had remained there all that time. Oh, so that's what Yirmiyahu was hoping. Well, Yirmiyahu was hoping he'd try to convince the people to submit to the Babylonians to let you stay. And when they didn't submit, then they kicked everyone out. They let a small community stay under Gedaliah. They killed Gedaliah. And still the Babylonians allowed a community to stay. But they grabbed Yirmiyahu and carried him off to Egypt, and Israel remained profoundly fallow. So when some Jews did return at the outset, I remind you, most Jews chose not to return. The few who did found an outcry. They all cried out to the Jews. They begged to have sex. We're not producing. The ground is not producing enough for us to live. Now, there's some areas are better equipped. equipped with the land is endowed with an ability to supply the people who live there with what they need to live, right? What animals need to graze so that they're there, they can give milk or meat or whatever it might be. And in general, the earth is endowed with many more times than we need to sustain ourselves. There are four states in the middle of the United States called the breadbasket,
right,
that when the weather is good and it's getting the rain it needs and the seeds are there, it can produce enough grain for the entire planet Earth. Just these four states. Right?
And now they have snow.
And okay, but I'm just saying, there are always glitches, there's this flooding, this snow. I'm just saying when all goes well. But look, when the pilgrims first came, you ever read the stories? When the pilgrims first came to these shores, they at first tried a profoundly socialistic and communistic type of society. There was a few people at the head who doled out parcels of land, and everybody gets exactly the same thing. And they almost starved. Right? And then they decided to say, no, let everyone just get their own. And there are terrible pitfalls with that too. Because then you say, shali, shali, shalcha, shalcha, goodbye. If you fail, goodbye, just starve. So that tends to happen also. So the Torah tries to combine these two with some kind of competitive edge, together with a leveling of the playing field, where you let the land lie fallow every 7 years, you give parts of your field to the poor and the less fortunate, and you give tithes, and et cetera, and so they try to level that out. But what's happening here with the Jews is that they just came to a place that wasn't producing for them. Now we know that Israel is a potential to be a very blooming land. It's bordered very much on one body of water. It has another fresh body of water, the Kinneret, right? And it's a land flowing with milk and honey, as the Torah says. And
then
Eretz Harim Uvkaot, and it's lots of oil and wine and grain. So it certainly has what it needs to supply the people. But not if God isn't shining His graces on
them. That's right.
Okay. V'yesh asher omrim, b'neinu v'naseinu nachnu rabim. We have so many sons and daughters, we have so many mouths to feed, but there's not enough grain to feed them in order to live. V'yesh asher omrim, and some are saying, stosenu kremenu b'teinu anachnu orvim, v'nikcha dagan b'ra'av. Sounds like the end of Sefer Bereishis, right? The end of Parshas Vayigash, that they said we are willing to give up all of our property just for some seeds, just something to sow the land. Right? We're ready to give up our houses, ready to give up our vineyards and our fields, which of course we need to grow those seeds, but we'll give over large portions of them in order to get some worthwhile seeds that will produce food. Okay, so they said we're willing to give up our houses as assurances that we'll pay back, right? So this is chapter 5, verse 5 now. Vato, kivsarachenu b'sarenu kivneim banenu v'hinei anachnu kovshim es banenu v'espnosenu l'avodim v'yesh mivnosenu nichbashos ve'en le'el yodenu stosenu kremenu l'achim. It's a big long pasuk that speaks of the Jewish community in Israel and the Jewish community in the diaspora. We see from this verse that this idea that the Jewish community in the diaspora is supposed to see as one of its main goals is to support the Jewish community that is in Israel, right? Obviously this finds some purpose to the Jewish community in the diaspora. Why are we here? What are we possibly doing here? Yecheskel and Haftorah, not this week, but next week. No, it's this week's Haftorah, Parshas Parah. This week is already a special Haftorah, right? Look carefully at this week's Haftorah from Sefer Yechezkel. He makes it very clear that Jews would never choose to live outside of Israel. The only reason why a Jew lives outside of Israel is because someone tied you to a slave ship and brought you there and sold you as a slave there. The second you get your freedom, the second you have your ability to get up and go where you want, you're heading back to Israel. All right, so from this time, that's no longer the case. There wasn't a great Jewish community outside of Israel during the first temple period. Right? It's here that this begins to be the case, where 42,000 Jews are in Israel, and 20, 30 times that amount are outside of Israel. More than that. Right? So that is a the situation he's saying is that the Jews who didn't make it to Israel, who were acting somewhat heroically because the odds are way against them, not to mention with the anti-Semite Persians, the Shomronim, who don't want them rebuilding the temple on their terms, and these other social issues of starving Jews living in Israel. All right? Look, Nehemiah himself starts out outside of Israel. And by the end of the story, it seems he went back out to serve his king. Right? King who's allowing him to do all these things. Right? So there you have it there too. Is that Nehemiah represents the diaspora Jew who uses his resources that he's able to make in the diaspora to help the Jews who are in Israel. Okay, so that's, isn't that what we're doing? Right?
There might also be a question about many of the Jews who went back are coming back because of carrying out a mitzvah of Yeshuva Aretz. But I'm trying to think about who came to America, who went to Australia. So maybe they're having trouble from the people from Achaim HaYehudim, the other one, the ones who are Zalkas Ha'am, Sheyam. Sheyam are the foreign wives, right? Is that the idea?
Yeah, yes.
So Ha'am, a lot of them are, you know, maybe people who had debts, maybe people who have bad records and who were a bit antisocial or downright criminals who were leaving, or maybe were fleeing the Persians for reasons that weren't so just because of anti-Semitism. You might have had a motley crew together with people who were more pure in their ideals who were going there. So among those 40-something thousand,
yeah,
how many of them were ruffians?
It's hard to draw a conclusion. I just know that when they came, there's a social disorder, people complaining. Right?
Maybe these were the guys with the swords working during the day and the night. The tough guys were doing the guard duty.
But who's more likely to go when this is happening? Obviously very idealistic people, but Adrava, maybe the people who just, you know, who don't have it good in the diaspora.
And maybe
because the people who have it so good in the diaspora, they're struggling with leaving all that behind. Because then the word is out what it's like in Israel. There's no question about that. They don't have emails, but the word is certainly out of how difficult it is. That word is what's keeping everybody from so many people from returning. Okay? So you see that this is a situation. Look, in Israel today, there is social upheaval because the bridge, the gap between the haves and the have-nots is getting greater and greater in Israel. Right? There's some phenomenal wealth in Israel with the technology that's going on, but there's also, and you know what? Fact is, I'm not so sure it's because of that it's endemic to the way the state is run. There are many thousands and thousands of people in Israel who are just satisfied to sit and learn Torah all day and receive a small stipend from the government, and the wife has a gun in the house, and they somehow get by. Overdrafts and whatnot, I'm not describing my kids that they've been this way, but okay. So I became very angry with this situation.
Didn't you once say that Yimos Mashiach really, even though they might be poor people, but they choose to live that way, and it's not that they can't.
One of the Gemara's proof saying Bein Olam Hazeh Yimos Mashiach Al Yishuv Malchus Bavad is that the world won't change because there's still going to be poverty. What Marx taught and what Trotsky and those chevra taught is that if you solve, you put a chicken in every pot, and you solve your economic woes, we're going to create a paradise on earth. That's just simple nonsense. Simple nonsense. Some people have more ambition than others, and you can't put everyone in a cookie cutter, and you're in Migdal Bavel or worse, North Korea. right? And everybody knows the only way to keep these things running the way it is to be like North Korea, right?
I think it's Ali Abed. When the Moroccans came, the wealthy of the Moroccans went to the capitals of the West, to London, to Paris especially, to Montreal, to New York, and those who didn't have it went to Israel, and then they liked their leadership because it's a very intermittent society, and then Israel had all these problems with Urus Fardim and all the problems that arose, so that's a modern return to Israel, right, that maybe casts some light on what went on.
Who's more likely to go to Israel, the very wealthy, or the one who have no better option? There you go. Why are so many Soviet Jews, former Soviet Jews, going to Germany instead of Israel? Why? Why so many? They're more going to Germany now than to Israel. Because Germany has more social services, that's all. Imagine that. Or at least that's the word that they're told. Right? Now they're going to Spain. Spain, if you saw further, that Spain just made. They're taking Jews to make up for their expulsion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's the new thing on the front burner in Spain.
No, it's better than Rambam going to Mitzrayim, where there was good, right. It was a good operation for him to be able to be a doctor. So you know, we're all Navarayani.
Okay, here we are. Vayichar li ma'od kashir shamati yizakasam v'sadvim ha'ela. I became very angry when I heard these calls and cries. I'm reading Zion. Vayimalech libi olai. This is a new usage of this terminology. In more modern Hebrew, it's called to be nimlach. It's used in the Talmud, but it's not used this way in Tanakh. To be nimlach is to change your mind. Right? Right? Or to be moved to do something different than you were doing. Vayimalech libi olai va'ariva esachorim esasagonim va'omro lohem maso ish be'ochiv atem. Atem noshim, v'atein lahem kihila gedola. Right, so he says here that he confronted the chorim and segonim. What's a chorim? Like the upper crust, the let's see, the aristocrats, right, the nobles.
Funny word to use for the chorim.
Yeah, that's could be referring to a people. There was an ancient people called the Chorin. Like Ben Chorin is a free person. Mm-hmm. Right? So there's a class of people called the Harari, the people who were freed. So like Mishachreir. So I went to those people and then I told them, Maso ish be'achiv atem noshim. Right? Now this could be seen as a question. The Rishonim understand this as a question. Are you, the aristocrats were taking advantage of the poor people? You see, it's one thing if people are poor because they just choose to be less ambitious and they're happy with what they have. Or it's that they're poor because they're being kept poor. And someone is a conspiracy. It's much easier to say that. Is that what the Occupy Wall Street people are saying? In other words, that, you know, that this is a land of opportunity still, right? When you say it's not equal, but it's still a land of opportunity. It's an opportunity for you. It's a question, are you taking it properly? Right? But here, Nehemiah is complaining that there is no opportunity. The rich are keeping the people. Like they have the feudal system in Europe. Right? The feudal system purposely kept the people impoverished with just their hopes for a few seeds from the suzerain every now and then to sow the land and a little protection if there's a battle. That was an important thing, of course, but it often didn't come through. Be that as it may, so Nehemiah is confronting the wealthy ones who are noshim. Noshim means that they're oppressing, they're crediting, creditors, and they're charging interest.
It's also from that same root, you know, like the name Menashe, like to forget. So, do they have something to do with each other? They just really?
I'm not sure. I don't think so. I
can't see the connection, but.
Okay, so it means I put a kila around them, like a large grouping, large crowd. And then we pulled together this crowd for Omrah Lahem. This word for Omrah is the same as Omar. It's just an emphatic type of tense, called the cohortative tense, like Osimo Olay Melech, Ve'ekcho Pas Lechem. Right? So it's not, certainly not feminine. Same as Omar. V'amro lehem, anachnu koninu esachinu ha-yudim anim korim lagoyim kidei bonu v'gam atem timkru esacheichem v'nimkru lanu v'yachurishu v'lo matzu davar. Look what's happening here. Remember, there was a lot of Jews sold into slavery after the exile. Their great children and grandchildren were probably still slaves, right? So these rich aristocratic Jews purchased them, but didn't set them free. Right? So he's saying that you have to, if you purchase them, you have to set them free. Right? Okay. Right? They were sort of speechless at this accusation because they realized that they had sinned. Right? If you came back to Israel and you saw all these Jews who were sold, were enslaved to the local, whether Babylonian or Persian, but now Persian populace. So how are you not taking care of them? These verses just refer to a huge gap in the social disorder, I should say, of what's going on. The very wealthy and the very poor.
Where do you see that they didn't let them free?
This is a little cryptic, no doubt. Right? Will you resell them? V'omar, lo tov hadavar asher atem osim, because of his reaction here. He says, you're not doing the right thing. Halo b'yiras elokeinu teilechu, mecher pasagoyim oyveinu. He says, we have to make ourselves different. We have to show our Kiddush Hashem here. How do you expect them to treat us any differently than we're going to treat each other? Why would you expect them to treat us any better than we're treating each other? Okay. The gamani achayu narai noshim bahem kesef edugan ma'azvono es hamaso hazeh. Right. So they said you're not doing a bad thing, right? You should walk with Yiras Hashem, right? Right. So he says, I have lent these people money and grain, right? And he's saying, but not on interest, of course. You know. But he says, now, look what he's telling them to do. He says, na'azvo no es hamaso hazeh.
It's too much of a burden anymore.
But na'azvo, what's that?
Stop doing it.
He's suggesting.
Or let it go, you mean like Shemitah?
Let it go. Let the debt go. Freeze the debt. Let it go. Say, no one owes me this money. Right? Relinquish it. Okay. So he's saying, that's the lashon. Na azvon no esama sohazeh. This great burden that they must bear, let it go. Hashivu no. He's telling this to the very wealthy ones. You can absorb this, right? Hashivu no lohem kayom sdosehem karmehem zesehem vatehem. Return to them this day, the field, their vineyards, their olive groves and their homes. Umasa kesef adogon vatiroshu itzara asher atem l'shem. So he says. So he tells them to leave all the money that's owed to you, the money that you have given them as credit. Just let it release it. That's the same lashon as shmita. Lahashmit means to release. Right? Remember when there was Isabel was being held at the window,
when we should pull that
he said Tishmatana, you know, release her, and she fell out the window.
Oh, great!
So that's the lashon that they used. The shmita to Tishmatana, which could mean like push her out the window. Okay. All right. So, Hashiva Nolahem Kayam. So return all these things to them. Right. Bayamrun Hashiv. Look, you see, someone speaks forcefully.
They listen.
They'll listen. speaks with a moral voice. But I'll tell you this, if Nehemiah had a reputation of immorality on his own right, who's listening to this? Who's listening to this? I speak so many times to adults who are today from like the 20s, 30s, they say, you know, when I was a teenager, 17, 19, 20, I wasn't from, and I was no way I'd be from today, if not for the fact that I saw that my parents were serious. They didn't just call me to the table and say, you have to win film, you have to win, and then I see them going off in their own derech. It's because I saw how serious they were that I made my way back. If parents are you know, just you know, kiss up and they say, well, I don't want my neighbors to know that my kid is off the derech, it's only because of that. And they themselves, you know, aren't as serious. Kids are very good at seeing hypocrisy. So Nehemiah was the real deal. He was so pure that when he gave them this harsh and this firm talk, it says they listened. Umehem lo nevakesh kein nasa, we will not request the loans to be paid back. Kein nasa kasher eta umer. Ve'akroas ha-kohanim va'ashbi'em la'asos kadavar hazeh. And they said, we will do as you say. So I called the kohanim, and I caused them to take an oath to do this thing. Gam chotzni no'arti va'omro kocho yina'er ha'elokim. Right? Chotzni. Chotzni no'arti means like my garment. It's a type of garment.
It's a shakeout.
Yeah. So it's my the hem of my garment, I straightened out, or I shook it. Right? If he did some kind of, you know, let's say he pulled out his pocket and he did something like this, he said, you see that? This is what God's going to make of you, an empty pocket, or something else, something like that, if you don't. Nehemiah is a creative kind of guy. If you don't start to listen to him. And they all said, bless you, all said amen. They all said amen, and they said, and they praised God, and they did this thing. Gam miyom asher tzivahu si lios pechom ba'eretz Yehuda mishnas 20 ba'ad shnas 32 artachshast melech ha-melech shonim 12. For 12 years, I went about trying to get this done. In order to get the people to improve these social woes. Aniva achai lechem hapecha lo achalti. I and my brothers, not just myself, but I and my brothers, we did not eat the bread of the governor. Now, the bread probably here means food. Right? We did not eat any of the food of the governor. We didn't eat his meat, his wine, etc., etc. Pachoser bishonim asher lofanai hichbidu ala amri kumehem balechem biayin achar. The people who were here before me, meaning the Jews who were in the court of the Persian king before me, they used to take advantage, and they would charge a lot of money. They would take all the abundant food that the king gave. This is corruption, and they would go resell it. And again, they're pushing on kosher food in out there, right? So this is corrupt. It's corrupt on every level, right? They were corrupt with Issa Beheter, and they were corrupt with Choshen Mishpah. Right? But I never did that because I feared God. And I was also busy, of course, building the wall. Remember that? Okay. The Perush is that during all this time, with all this decay that's going on, the majority of my efforts had to be directed towards fixing this wall. And what happened as a result? The Sodeh Lo Kaninu, it came at the expense of my own fields and growing crops. I had to choose between fixing the wall and growing crops. V'chol narai kutzim sham al ha-malacha. And all the people I brought in, the king's resources, were busy with this work on the wall.
Okay, so
ובין עשרת ימים בכל יין הרבה, ואם זה לחם ובכל לא ביקשתי, כי כבדו עבודו על העולם הזה.
Wow.
And this is the amount of food. Look at all that food that they're making on a regular basis. Right? But I didn't request the governor's food. Right? This is for the workers with the king sent them to build the wall.
But if they were not making, tending the field, where's the next crop coming from?
He had to choose. He had to decide which one is more important right now. And now he said, we won't get anywhere if we don't have security. So we'll take care of that first. So this, the upshot of this chapter is very simple. There was social decay, the social disorder. It manifests itself in confiscatory lending practices. And Nehemiah demanded that they release those loans. Not just a loan without interest, but to release the loan altogether, right? Maybe a hint to a Shemitah practice, right? And he did, and the people listened. So a forceful moral voice can turn things around. That's not to say that the prophets that didn't turn things around were not moral. I'm not saying that. There might have been other reasons why that didn't work then. But that's certainly crucial to the voice being heard. And then he concludes the parable by saying, Zachroi li Elokai l'tova, remember me, God, for this good. Kol asher asisi ala mazeh, all the good things I've done. The rabbis were not thrilled with this type of... which other prophets speak this way, right? There's a pasuk that says, Tehillim, there's all, you know. But Nehemiah does it a lot. And at times at the expense of others. So we've discussed that already.
Okay. Is that why he doesn't get his own book?
That's one, and that's the reason.
That,
this is the pasuk, the Gemara in Sanhedrin cites. This pasuk.
Remember me?
Yeah. Remember? Okay, you have your book. But I'm not going to remember you as your own book.
Is Smash of Yosef saying, remember me?
Okay, yeah. Rahabim, that, yeah. Chazal said, correct. Okay.